Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayemi Meseches Chulin Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. We are holding actually just about halfway down the Amud. So you'll notice halfway down, Amar Shmuel. We speak so much about salted meat in order to extract its blood. So how do we actually go about it? What's the process involved? Here goes. Amar Shmuel. Eina Basar. You're meant to know that the meat will not free itself of its blood unless you put it through a very intense salting process. Amar Shmuel. Eina Basar. Yoytze midei damoy. The basar will not leave from its blood. Interesting way of saying it. Basically, it will not be considered blood-free unless Ella im Cain, unless he goes ahead and does as follows. Firstly, Moil Choy Yafa Yafa, he salts it really intensely, really properly. Umadicha Yafa Yafa, followed by a proper, thorough rinse. And then Farshim explain that Moil Choy Yafa Yafa indicates that it's not sufficient just to splatter it with some, sprinkle it with some salt, and then just rinse it off. It has to be saturated with salt. It has to sit on there. And the accepted, you know, practice is to have it sit for an hour. And then you rinse it properly. Then it's blood-free. Itmar, however, we learned, Rav Huna Amar Meliach Umediach. So he puts it at two steps, right? Salt and then rinse it. However, V'masnisa Tanan the Brice, it seems to have three steps. Mediach, first you rinse it, so it's a pre-salting rinse. And then, step number two, uzamoyleach. He salts it. And then step three, umoydeach, he rinses it again. Versus Rav Huna, who just lists two steps, salting and rinsing. Is there a machlokes? No, there is no dispute whatsoever. All agree. It's a three-step process. Rinse, followed by a salting. And the point of rinsing, by the way, Farshim explained, is to remove the surface blood so that the salt doesn't just get stuck there. We want the salt to penetrate the piece of meat. So the rinse cleans it off. It opens up the, you know, the pore. It gets it sort of ready for the salting process. We all agree that's needed. There is no machlekes here. Loi pligi. When Rav Huna presents it as a two-step process, salting and rinsing without the original rinse, he already washed it by the butcher, Beit Habcha, the butcher already rinsed it. Thus, only step two and three are necessary. Whereas the Braisa is speaking, it wasn't rinsed at the butcher. And therefore, a three-step process is needed, rinsing, salting, and rinsing. Rav Dimi min Ardo, what do you do? Malchle, he would salt his meat, but milcha, using salt, which was coarse, galanisa, like rock salt, big pieces of monopoly, and then he would just bang it off. Rashi explains, the advantage was that you don't have to rinse it anymore, because when you use, you know, thin table salt, it sort of dissolves and it gets all, you know, embedded, so you have to rinse it off, but rock salt just draws out the blood, and it's sitting now on the in the rock on the granules on the surface. Just give it a little bang to shake off the salt. Amar of Mesharshia. You know, your typical piece of meat needs to be salted to ensure that it's blood free, but there are some organs within the animal that are known to be blood free. Ein machzik in dam, don't presume there's any blood in the following items. We have nemi ayim, within the digestive system. So which specific areas are we talking about? Tergumah, it was applied, it was explained to refer to the following. Akarkasha, the last section of the large intestine. Umeyaya, and the digestive system, Rashi explains, it refers to all the stomachs, the keva, the keres, the sharadak, and all the small intestines. Vahadra dekanta, and the section which is called Hadra, it goes around the area called Kanta. So that section of intestine is presumed to be free of blood. Amar Shmuel. Emanichan Basar Maliach further explains Shmuel that when you salt, ensure that your salting bowl is perforated. which will serve as a drainage system to allow the blood to trickle out rather than just sitting there with the meat. In which case it might get reabsorbed inside your meat. The meat that's being salted should be placed only ela al gabe kli menukav. It must be placed in a bowl that has holes, which allows the blood to trickle out. Now, Rav Sheshes malach legar megar, he was careful to salt one cut of meat at a time. Asks the Gemara, why only one at a time? Trey, two together, my time. What's wrong with two together? Apparently because he was concerned that some blood might leave piece A and enter piece B. Therefore, only one at a time. Well, then, even the same piece of meat, the blood can leave the top part and enter the bottom part. Chadnam, even one piece of meat being salted on its own presents a similar concern, because parish mahagis, the blood might leave this side of the piece, ubal hagis, and then get absorbed on the other side. So you'll never be able to salt any meat. Ella, so must be, leishna, doesn't really matter. Meaning, Rashi explains, based on the Gemara back yesterday and Kufi and Beis and Beis. Kol's man shetrudim lifloit, says Rashi, einan boilim. As long as the piece of meat is preoccupied, so to speak, with expelling its content. You know, while you're talking, you can't really listen too well. So while you're giving out, you're expelling, you're releasing, you're not going to be absorbing anything. And since both pieces of meat are sitting together and releasing their blood at the same time, at the same rate, while that's happening, there's no absorption going on. And that blood just trickles down through the holes out of the, right? So there's no concern about absorption. So again, just like within the same piece of meat, there's no concern because it's just expelling. The same would apply to two pieces side by side. Now, unless they're working with different rates of expulsion, as we learned the other day with the fish versus the chicken, but here it's two identical, pieces of material that are expelling at the same time, at the same rate. Now, presumably, you put them in the clay at the same time, right? So the process is happening simultaneously. There's no concern about reabsorption. Unless it's a clay without holes and just sitting, it's just immersed in its blood. Then, as soon as it finishes releasing its blood, now it's open to absorption, it's going to reabsorb its own blood. But if it's a proper drainage system, it's okay. Amar Shmuel Mishmar Bechia. Furthermore, instructs Shmuel regarding this topic. Hashevim Afrakta Shobahim. If one cracks the back of the neck, the backbone, Koidem Shateti Nafsha, before the animal actually becomes fully lifeless. So after the shechita, he goes and cracks the neck. Hareza Machbedes Habasar, he shouldn't do that because he's going to be adding artificial weight to the meat. Because as Rashi explains, the animal in distress, is trying to expel its blood from its arteries, during the shechita process. And then when this happens, the animal is in extreme distress and it loses that ability to propel that blood out. And what happens to that blood? It now goes back from the arteries, from the duct. It now gets absorbed into the meat, into the flesh of the animal. And that person now becomes extra heavy. V'goizel sabrius, in which case when he sells this meat, this butcher is going to be deceiving his customers, charging them, double the price, or double the weight for the blood inside, right? U'mavli'a dam be'ivarim, he's going to be reabsorbing this blood into the system, into the meat. Now, what exactly does he mean? Iboilu, what did Shmuel have in mind? Is it just, a monetary issue? You shouldn't be selling them because you're overcharging? Or is it more than just a cheshed mishpat monetary issue? Is it perhaps a yeridah issue? Perhaps isur v'heter issue, even for the butcher himself? How could that be? Let's see. Iboilu, question was posed. Hey, Chikama, what exactly did he have in mind? Machbed es habasar, v'goizel es habriyos. It's adding weight to the basar. it's defrauding his customers. Why? Mishum. And the reason is because, right, he was explaining it. Mishum mavliya tamivarim, because of that extra blood being absorbed in the organs of the animal. So it's merely a monetary issue. But let's say he's not selling it. He's just eating it himself. Holiday, but for him himself, Shabbat, that means okay. Because ultimately the salt will extract any blood, right? That's one way to look at it. Or you can say, it's more than just a choshen mishpat monetary issue. It's even forbidden to the butcher himself, to the fellow who did this, to eat it on his own, because, as Rashi explains, this isn't really natural blood. Yeah, the salt can extract blood which was naturally, in the meat. But this blood is imported from the outside. It's the blood that's circulating in the artery system of the animal. It doesn't belong in the meat. And now, because of this trauma, it's going to embed himself in the meat. So it came from the outside in. And this blood, says Rashi, perhaps the salt cannot extract anymore. And therefore, he himself can't eat it. Forget about selling it. You can't even eat it. Us, take it. We leave it as an unresolved question. Okay, so in summation, salting process takes place in a kli with holes to drain out the blood. It's rinsed, it's salted, it's rinsed again. And you can do many at a time because as long as it's expelling, it's not going to be absorbing. Says the Mishnah. So we discussed refraining from serving meat and milk together on the same table, right? Even for different customers, because it may be, mixed up. But regarding chicken, it's not an issue. If one places chicken with cheese on the same table, there's no issue, there's no lav. Now, Rashi explains, obviously there's no lav because it was never asa min ha-Torah to place things on the same table. Rather, the main objective of the Mishnah in wording it this way is to indicate to us that, true, serving them together is not an issur d'oraisa, but if you should actually eat them together, chicken and milk together, that would constitute an issur d'oraisa. Let's see the Gemara. But apparently, oichlo, if he eats them together, even chicken, right, with milk, oiver, he has transgressed, b'leisas, ishma mino. Does that mean to say, basar oif, right, chicken flesh, b'chalav mixed with milk is also d'oraisa, which is really a big machlokes, whether it's d'oraisa or not, we'll see in the next Mishnah. Do you mean to say that? Ema, no, says the Gemara. Who says? Not necessarily. Ema, perhaps we can learn the Mishnah differently. If one serves the chicken in conjunction with the cheese on the same dining room table, it can never generate issa d'oraisa, because even if we should eat them together, it's really not asur min ha-Torah. Like the other sheet that we're going to see in the next mission, we'll keep the sheet. Oh, here comes the mission. Basar behema tahira. He speaks so much about the Yisra basar b'chalav to be cooked together, eaten together. What type of meat, what type of milk qualifies for this Yisra? Says the mission, very limited. It has to be of a kosher variety. Behema tahira, right? Basar behema tahira, the meat of a kosher animal, mixed with milk of the same type, of a kosher type, b'chalav behema tahira, that's asra lavash lavasra banoi. You may not cook it together, and if he does, you can't even have benefit from that material, let alone eat it. But if it's basra behema tahira, flesh from a kosher animal, mixed with milk from an unkosher animal, that's not b'chalav imoi. Imoi means it's the same type, it's his mother's milk. But if it's from an elephant, b'chalav behema tmeya, or vice versa, basra behema tmeya, the flesh of an unkosher animal mixed with kosher milk, b'chalav behema tahira, mutu lavashal, mutu b'ano, you can cook them and have anah from that. Okay, so according to Tanakama, the issur basar b'chalav applies to behema, to chaya, to oif of the kosher variety. Rabbi Kiva disagrees. Rabbi Kiva omer, chaya v'oif eino min ha-Torah. The primary Isser, Basar B'chalav min ha-Torah, is only Basar Behema. But Basar of Chaya, an undomesticated type of animal, or of a chicken, that's not Osar min ha-Torah. Shenemar, we have a pasuk, which is repeated three times in the Torah, right? They said, Vashal Gdi, you should not cook the flesh of a goat, B'chalev Imoy, the milk of its mother, meaning milk of a kosher animal, right? It says it three times. Why the repetition? it's meant to limit, to exclude, to define the Isser. Prat as opposed to lachaya, flesh of an animal, ulaif or of a fowl, or ubehimatme of an unkosher animal. Rashi explains that the first gadi excludes a bird. Gadi is an animal, a behemoth, it's not a bird. The next gadi excludes a chaya. Now typically, usually we say chaya is included under the behemoth banner. Chaya and behemoth are synonymous, but here, the fact that it's an extra pasuk is coming to tell you, no, here it's different. We stick to behemoth, not to chaya. And the third gadi is to exclude the unkosher types, the unkosher family of animals. And Rashi adds, what about a kosher type which is not a gadi? I mean, the pasuk specifies goats, perhaps only goats. What about a sheep? What about a cow? And Rashi brings that the Gemara will discuss how we know that it covers all types of kosher, you know, animals of the kosher family. Okay, so Kondra Rekiva, it's only behema, not chai v'oif. A third sheet is Rabbi Saglili Aymer. He says Nemar. He says it covers behema and chai, but not oif. How do I know Nemar? Leisech l'kol nevela. In the same pasuk, it says, don't need a nevela. And then it says, v'nemar, loyseva shal gadi b'chalei v'imoy. So we make that correlation. Why are they both in the same pasuk? To mash them up. As shosom shem nevela, a type of animal which is susceptible to the halacha of nevela, such as behema or chaya, if it dies, you can't eat it. Also levashal b'chol, that too cannot be cooked in milk. So that covers behemah and chaya. What about a fowl? What about chicken? Oif she'asa, which also has the isra mishum nevela. Perhaps yochel ye'asa levashal b'chol, it's also forbidden with milk. Tamud leimar. The pasuk ends with the words b'chalei v'imoy, in its mother's milk. Only a behemah has that phenomenon. Yotza oif, as opposed to fowl, she'en le'chel v'im. There's no mother's milk there, so it's not applicable to the flesh of fowl. So we have three shittas. Tanakama applies it to all three classes of animals. Behemah chayiv oif, provided they're tohir, right? Rabbi Saglili excludes birds, and Rabbi Kiva excludes chaya and oif minatir. Now, we all agree that although the pasuk references gadi, we expand it to all other types of behemoths of the kosher family. Be they goats, sheep, oxen, right? Cows. How do I know? Manonamili. How do I know to expand it to other types? Amar Blazer, Amar Kro. The pasuk speaks about Yehuda sending the goats there. Amar Kro. Vayishlach Yehuda. Vayishlach Yehuda as gadi ha'izim. In exchange for his item there. So it says gadi ha'izim. Return to my base. Why does the pasuk have to say gdi ha'izim? Isn't it repetitive? I mean, gdi is a goat and izim. The answer is to tell you, kan gdi izim. Specifically in this case, the gdi is limited to izim. So izim defines what gdi is. It's a goat. Ha kol makim shnei gdi istam. But this implies that elsewhere, where it just says the word gdi, like lo yisevasho gdi b'chalei v'imoy, stam, without defining it further, it covers all types of kosher animals. I feel a part of a rachel b'mashma covers even a cow, even a sheep. Now we know that lo yisevashel gadi b'chalei v'imoy is not limited to a goat. Rather, it covers all types of behemoths within the kosher family. So as the Gemara says, v'leilif minei. Perhaps we should use this as a source. Just like over there, it's limited to the goat type. Same with basar b'chalav. Answer is Ksiv Karachrina. We have another pasuk. Yet another pasuk. This is by Rivka Imenu, who gave Yaakov to wear the skins of the goats, right, to make him feel hairy to Yitzchak to get the brachis. And what does it say over there? Ksiv Karachrina v'es oirois gdoyei ha'izim. Once again, we have gdoyei and izim, which is sort of a repetition to tell you once again that only in this case does gdi specifically mean a goat. Kan gedoyi ha'izim, ha'kol makom shenemar gedi stam, but elsewhere, like by basar b'chalav, where it says gedi without defining it further, that covers all types of kosher varieties. Afilu parav rochav b'mashma. Asks the Gemara, who says once again, perhaps we should learn from here Just like by this pasuk, Gedoye means Izim. The same with Pasuk B'chalav, Gedi means Gedi. V'leilof minei. The answer is, Havelehu shnei ksuvin aban ke'echad. We have two psukim, this one and the previous one, which were basically telling us the same thing, that Gedoye is limited to Izim, and we know that when the Torah repeats the same concept twice, it could have just said it once and we could just learn from there, right? The point of repeating it twice is to say it's limited to these two cases and these two cases only. V'chalav shnei ksuvin. Whenever we have two ksuvim ha-boim ke'echa teaching the same identical item, ein melamin, they don't serve as a source to elsewhere. So sure, in these two cases, gedoy means izim, but by basa b'chalav, gedi means all types. That's true according to the shita that says you can't learn from a double pasuk. El mandam melamin, but the one who says you could learn from a double pasuk, my kelamim, and now we're back stuck. How do we know that gedi is more than izim? It's more than just a double pasuk. If you look at the pasukim, we have an extra hey. Right? It says, Vishlach Yudas Gdi Ha Izim, because it's Gdi Izim, Ha, the extra hey, and same way, Rivka, Es, Oyrois Gdi Ha Izim, the extra hey is telling us. Tremotik Sivi, Izim Ha Izim, the extra hey. Isn't it indicating that the A's requirement is limited to this case, but not to be applied elsewhere? Okay, so in conclusion, we know that the issur of mixing basar b'chalav applies to all types of behemoths of the kosher family. Omar Shmuel. What else do we learn from this triple pasuk? Right, this is listed. Vashav dibachalav imay three times. We learn many halachas. The first gedi tells us, l'rabbi says, achelav. Oh, even chelav, which is really forbidden on its own, forbidden fats. If it's mixed with milk, it gets an additional iser. Because now it's a new product called basar b'chalav. So you over two isurim, one on account of its chelev, that pre-existing iser, now the new iser basar b'chalav. Next, the next gedi is coming to tell us, the rabbi is amesa. Once again, even an animal who's already usher because it died, it's a carcass, an avela. But now that it's mixed with milk, it gets an additional iser basar b'chalav. Next gedi is the rabbi zashlut to include the fetus, the unborn animal. That's also considered meat with respect to basar b'chalav. The next gedi lo yitzis adam, to exclude blood. Blood is not flesh. The next gedi lo yitzis ashilya, to exclude the embryonic sac. That's not considered basar. And finally, gedi lo yitzis atmeya, to exclude the unkosher varieties, which are incompatible with a gdi, which is a goat, which is kosher. Now, the obvious question is, how can we learn six halachis from three psukim? It only says gdi three times, and we're learning six things. We'll get to that in a second. But first, let's see the end of the pasuk. Leisavashal gdi in what? Bachaliv imoy, and it says it three times. The first one is, loy b'chalav zachar, only the chalav of its mother, meaning the female animal, as opposed to milk that may have been produced. They found some milk inside a male animal. That's not really included. Next, Bachaliv Imoy is coming to exclude the B'loi Bachalav Shchuta. Here it is. Here it is. We speak about this all the time, right? The Chalav found inside a Shechted animal. That's not Chaliv Imoy. Chaliv Imoy means that it was drawn from the mother while it's a mother, while it's alive. So this type of milk with meat is not Osir Min HaTorah. Min HaRabbanan is, but not Min HaTorah. And finally, Bachaliv Imoy, its mother's milk, only milk of a kosher type, v'loy, as opposed to b'chalev of tmei of an unkosher animal. Now the question is, how can we learn six things out of three psukim? Ha t'lasuk di ksiv. It only says di three times, and we're attempting to learn six things. V'anashita darshinan. We have to try to somehow condense, double things up, and free some psukim. Oh, kasara Shmuel. The answer is Shmuel holds. Isr chal al isr. Based on these psukim, we will learn that by basar b'chalav, you can have one isr apply itself to a pre-existing isr. We could double up isurim. Rashi explains like this. It says, lo sabash al gadi b'chalav imay three times. And really, it didn't really have to say any of them. Why? Look, the pasuk could have said, lo sabash al b'chalav imay. Don't cook it in its mother's milk. Now, obviously, we're talking about meat. Don't cook it in its mother's milk. So, in effect, the word gedi was never really needed. So now we have three gedis, which are extra. which will allow us to learn all these things. Explains Rashi. The first Gadi tells us that even when you have material which is already osur, like forbidden fat, like nevela, but now that it's cooked with milk, it generates an additional layer of isur. Isur is chal, it lands, it doubles up on the pre-existing isur. But they can both be learned from the same pasuk because they're both the same concept. You don't need a separate pasuk for chalev with milk and nevela with milk. So now we saved ourselves one pasuk, right? Isur chal isur, isur chalev, and the isur of chalev then mixed with milk, umesa, or the nevela mixed with milk, to tell you that the isur doubles up, mechat kornavke, they both learned from the same pasuk. Okay, so these two are now condensed in one pasuk. So we saved ourselves a pasuk. Mechat kornavke. To exclude blood, to say that it's not considered, flesh, dam nami, lav gadihu, obviously it's not gadi. You don't need a special pasuk with that. It's just excluded from the simple, basic, implication of the word gadi. You don't need a separate pasuk for that. And the same thing with the shilya, the sack around the embryo. The shilya nami pirsha ba'amu, it's just waste material. It's not really... So we're still left with two gadis, pasha lutrei. One is chad l'rabis ashlil, to cover the feeders, to include that as under the, category of meat. V'chad l'muti behemet mei, wanted to exclude the unkosher varieties. Ask the Gemara, v'savar shmol isur chal isur, is that true that according to Shmuel you can double up isurim? V'amar shmol, Shmuel quotes Mishum b'lazer. On to a slightly different topic here, but we're going to come back home in a minute. Minayin l'koyin tamei she'achal truma tmei she'enem b'misa. Typically, when a koyin who is personally tamei, he not only truma, if he does, he gets misa. Misa de shamayim. On the other hand, if the koyin is perfectly tahor, but the material, the truma, happens to be tamei, there is an iser, but Rashi says it's not as severe as personal tuma. It's only an iser asay. He meant to refrain from it, right? Without, liability, without, of Misa, right? Now, let's say they both come together. He's Tamei, and the Truma is Tamei. The Gavra and the Chepzer, right? So what happens to him? Menayin l'koyin Tamei shachal Truma Tamei. What if a koyin who is Tamei ate Truma, which is Tamei? So it in itself is already disqualified. She'enu Misa is not going to be open to Misa. Shenamar, the pasuk says, Omeisu boy kichaluluhu. The koyin is liable to death because he desecrated the truma when he ate it when he was tamei. Prat lazu, as opposed to what the truma itself is already disqualified. Shem chulalas v'emedet, it's already bereft of kedusha. It's already tamei. The question is, why is he exempt? I mean, I understand the there's a pre-existing isser there, whatever. But isur chalal isser, you can double up isurim. There's no issue with that according to Shmuel. So why shouldn't he be getting misa? We have three terutzim. Boyisim, one terutz is ba'alma isur chalal isur. Yeah, typically you can double it up. Shani asam the miyed kruach mana. But here it's an exception. The Torah excludes umesu boy. The misa is only applicable when the person was tummy and the truma was tahar. So that excludes this case, where the truma itself is already tummy as well. Boyisim, another terutz is ba'alma kasava shmol enes chalal isur. Really? Typically, Shmuel does not hold you can double up Yisurim. So it's a pre-existing Yisur. It's already saturated with Yisur. You can't push in more Yisur. Shani Hacha. But Basa B'chalav is different. There's a special Pasuk that is an exceptional case. The Rabbi Rachman Agdid is an extra Gadid to tell you that even though it's already Yisur, when it gets cooked with milk, that's a new Metzius. It's a new entity. And now there's a new Yisur as well. Another way to answer this apparent contradiction is two different people speaking. Shmuel himself initially said, yeah, you can double up Yisurim. But later on, when Shmuel spoke about the Truma, it wasn't his own personal opinion. He was quoting his Rebbe, Rabbi Lazar, a different source. He asked the question, Barami Mirav. Since the Torah specifies that he's cooking meat in his mother's milk, what if it's not a mother yet? It's a gadi, it's a goat or whatever, a cow, which hadn't yet actually given birth. And Rashi explains that the animal is already presenting milk in its udders because of the impending birth, but it hadn't yet birthed. Now, what happens there? Is this milk considered asr for basa b'chalav? Or perhaps not. It's not yet a mother. It's not yet imoy. Now, Amalezi says, of course it is. Since Shmuel was required to bring a special pasuk b'chalev imoy, to tell you b'chalev zachar as opposed to milk from a male animal. What does that tell you? Zachar, who the leosel chalev. That only the chalev of a zachar is excluded because he could never potentially become a birther. Aval hai, but this female cow, kivon debo b'chalev, since it can, it will, arrive at the status of an aim, it can't have birth. Aser, certainly, it's considered basar b'chalav. Itmar, it comes into question. I'm a vashal chaylev b'chalav. He actually cooked his forbidden fat with milk. And the Gemara is assuming that he ate it. The question is about eating it. Is it considered a basar b'chalav product regarding consumption? Rabbi Ami had a machlekes with Rabbi Yasi. Chadama once says, Loiki gets malkus for eating basar b'chalav. One says it doesn't get malchus. What's the machlekes about? Lema, perhaps we can propose, but ultimately machlekes revolves around the following question. Do we double up isurim? Do we apply the additional isra basar b'chalav on a pre-existing isra of chalav? Lema, ultimately. The madam, the one that applies malchus, kasabri holds isur, chalal isur, one isur can land on the other. Umanda Omar Ainu, like the one says that he's exempt from Malkus for eating basar b'chalav, because he holds Ein Isur Chalal Isur, you can't double up Isurim, and since it's already Asur on account of its Chalav status, you can't add any more. Loi, no, the Kulyam all agree Ein Isur Chalal Isur, you can't double up Isurim. And you're right, Achilo, regarding its consumption, of course he's exempt. The Kulyam Lepligat Lelaki all agree he's not going to get Malkus on account of basar b'chalav, because it's already Asur on account of our previous Isur. The question is regarding cooking this matter. Because you realize, with respect to the act of cooking, there is no pre-existing isra. Because there's no isra to cook chalev. I mean, you can't eat chalev, you could cook it. So now when you're cooking that chalev with chalev, it's a new phenomenon. You're introducing a new isra. And that's the question. The question arises regarding cooking it. Mandar Malaga, the one that says that gets malchus for cooking chalev and chalev, he holds very simply, Chad Isuru, it's the first time there's an Isur with respect to cooking. It's not doubling up. Of course he gets Malkus. Madam and Eloika, the one that says there's no Malkus for cooking fat with milk. Why? Lahachi Afka Rachmana. If you look at the Pesukim, you find an interesting phenomenon. The Pasuk. Loisavashal Gediba Chalivim speaks about cooking, even though we all know that one is for forbidding the act of cooking. One is to forbid eating it. One is to forbid having any benefit, right? So why does the Torah repeat, Lo yisavashal, if one of them is about eating it? You know why? L'achi afka rachmanav l'achila, that's why the Torah referred to eating b'lo shem bishul and called it bishul. To tell you, it's related. It's almost like, you know, the cooking of this mix is a preparation. You're generating material on which there's an issa to consume. But it's very closely related. Kivan. Da'alachila loki, abishunamil loki. It's interrelated. Suppose you have a mix of something with milk, which if you would go ahead and eat it later, after it's cooked, you wouldn't be liable. Achila lelaki, such as the chela, which already had a pre-existing isra. Now that's cooked with milk, you can't add another isra onto that. So there's no malchus for eating it. Abishu nami lelaki. Guess what? He doesn't get malchus for cooking it either. Because if you don't get malchus for the end product, for consuming the end product, you don't get malchus for preparing it, so to speak. And that's why the Torah referred to even the eating process as lo yisavashal, because they're connected. Okay, that's one way to learn the machlekes. V'yikad Amri, there's yet another way to learn this machlekes. Again, we're speaking that he cooked chalev and chalev. Some say there is malchus, some say there isn't. V'yikad Amri, abishul kulam lepigid lok. You all agree for cooking it, of course you get malchus, because there's no double isser there. It's the first time he's encountering an isser. There's no isser to cook chalev per se, so now that he's cooking it with milk, there's an isser, there's malchus. Ki pligi achila, the question is regarding eating this product. Manda Amar ein eloika, the one that says there's no malchus. Well, that's pretty simple. You can't double up Yisurim. The chel was already Yisur beforehand. You can't add another one. Umanda Malaka, the one that holds that there is Malkus. You know why? Here it's an exceptional case. He takes the same svara, the same sort of formula, and he twists it around. He goes the other way. You know why? The Torah used the lashon of bishul in relation to eating, even with respect to eating it, to connect it to. But the other way around, given that bishul laki, to tell you that if he gets malchus for cooking it, for preparing it, achil nami laki. Subsequently, when he sits down and has this meal, he gets malchus for it too, despite the fact that the item there is already us from beforehand. He generated a new entity, so to speak. Yeah, beforehand it was just plain fat. Now it's a new metzius. It's a new phenomenon. It's a new product. Brand new entity called a mix of milk and meat. If he gets malchus for the cooking, which means to say that he now generated a new forbidden entity, so if he sits down and eats this new entity, is chai, anu, achil and amilanki, ibay semer. Is yet a third way to understand this machlekes. Guess what? There really is no machlekes. They're speaking about different things. He's speaking about the malchus for cooking it. He's speaking about non-malchus for eating it. Ibay semer, another way to learn, mar or mar chada, between Ravami and Ravasi, there was no machlekes at all when he mixed the chalev and the chalev. He's speaking about the cooking process, in which case he gets malchus, because there's no doubling isurim there, there's no isur to cook chalev per se, so when he cooks it with milk, there's an isur and there's malchus. And the one that says that it's exempt is talking about eating it. Well, for eating, it was already asur, on account of its chalev status. So there's no isur, no malchus for eating it with milk. Ibai Seyma, Mar Marchad, he spoke about one phenomenon, Mar Marchad, he spoke about a different aspect. There really is no machlekes between the two. Okay, let's recap today's daf. We describe in great detail the process of salting meat. You could do a whole bunch at a time. In a clean menukov, rinsed, salted, rinsed. Almost make sure not to have the blood embedded in the evarim as the animal experiences its post-shechita experience. We spoke about the question of which materials are also with chalav, whether it's behema chayva oiv, whether it's just behema b'chayo, or whether it's just behema. You know, Minat Torah. We spoke about the fact that it has to be Behema Torah for sure, but it's not limited to Gedi. Covers all types of kosher, animals, Parah, Rachel, etc. And then we had the whole printout of Shmuel. What is considered Basra needs to be really Basra, as opposed to the Shilya, as opposed to Dam. We ruled out Chalav of a zachar, the chalav of a shchuta, the chalav of behemat meyo. We did, however, include the chalav and the mesa, despite the fact that they were already elsewhere. Okay, so going to Shmuel, we have a short pasuk to add the basar chalav onto those items as well. We spoke about the chalav of a female cow prior to birth, which is also included. We had an interesting machlek is regarding cooking chalav and chalav, and several ways to explain that machlekes. All the best to you. Thanks for listening. Hatzlacha Rabbah.